Are you saying
you faked with me?
Yeah.
Wrong. Now you're single.
What do you know about sexual relations?
Is it true that if you don't use it, you lose it?
I'm a little worried about being a slut.
You're listening to the Come With Us podcast, talking the good, the kinky, and the ugly. Here are your hosts, Beth and Aaron.
Hello, 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 all you sexy holes and poles. Welcome, welcome to Come With Us podcast. Do you and your partner have, or have you ever had like a private language? Like, would you just take words and make them your own? I don't know. It could be as simple as simple terms of endearment, or it could be as complicated as creating a whole new Klingon or something language. I don't know. But a lot of couples do. And some people, though, avoid. And they say, oh, that's too silly. That's too sappy. We're never going to do that. Well, today's guest, Susanna Weiss, wants to help us understand why using a private language that only you and your partner can understand, why that's that sort of intimacy, if you will, can improve your love life. If you prefer, think of it kind of like having codes. And who doesn't like to break a code? So welcome to Come With Us podcast. Again, we know that sexy stuff matters just as much as the lovey-dovey stuff, and we want to help you get your pleasure in every way possible. I'm Beth Darling, author of The Five Kinds of Intimacy, How to Keep Your Love Alive. If you haven't gotten your copy yet, please go to Amazon.com, go get your copy. Or if you've already got it and read it, please give me a review on Amazon. I appreciate it so much. So, all right, Aaron, Susanna, welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm so glad that y'all are here. Let me tell you about Susanna first before I let her speak, because she's pretty amazing, a Brown University graduate who's authored over 8,500 articles, served as an editor for Teen Vogue, Vice, Complex. She's written for Bustle, Refinery 29, The Washington Post, New York Magazine, on and on and on. She's a board-certified sexologist, a sex educator, and also a birth doula. So you can find her writings and more at SusannaWeiss.com. And of course, the link will be in the show notes. So again, wow, Susanna, I'm so glad you're here. I'm so awestruck. I don't even know how you possibly can write 8,500 articles, period, let alone you're young.
Does that mean I'm outnumbered by like Ivy League people here now?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Fancy.
Whatever. I know.
Sometimes you need a guy with just a freaking associates who works with his hands and crap.
Oh, I love a man who works with his hands, Aaron. You know this.
Sometimes you need a big dumb idiot who can talk a little bit.
Oh yeah, right.
To balance it out.
I tell y'all don't talk over the normal
common man's head.
Oh my goodness. All right. So,
anyways,
welcome, Susanna. I'm so glad that you're here. So, tell me, how did you think to start looking into the private languages that couples use?
Me and my boyfriend at the time were using languages ourselves. Like, we would add syllables to everything. Like, instead of dog, we would say diggle dog, or like, we had an Airbnb host named Gary and we would call him Giggle Gary. It was this like iggle rule where we just added like two syllables that rhyme with iggle in some way. And so then we were talking about it with another friend of mine, and he was like, oh yeah, my boyfriend and I say huggle. And so I was like, I wanted to know, is this a thing? Is this like something more than just us do? So I started interviewing other people who have their own languages, as well as experts who could explain why people do this and what effect it might have on a relationship.
Okay, so how did you start, right? Again, because you're this brilliant woman, you definitely, like, you're a word nerd like me, you love, you know, you write, you read. How did you just decide to start adding iggle things to words?
I don't remember. I really don't remember the first iggle word. It just, I think it sounded cute to us. It was like a very endearing way of speaking.
Okay. Aaron, do you have do you and your wife have different words for things?
No, we've not. I don't know if we've really made up words. Like, that's, I'm trying to think, and I almost just texted her, but I know she's in the middle of a meeting right now and she's going to look at her watch and be like, are you fucking kidding? Why do you want to stop? Or she'll get mad at me because I don't know them off the top of my head. But no, It's interesting because, like, when you said adding, like, iggle to certain words, like, it reminds me of being a, you know, preteen or teenage boy, and you always had the groups of girls who had their own, like, unknown secret language so they could talk about other people around that. Like, and it was, and always, as guys, we always like, why? Just, if you're going to say it, just say it. Don't keep this. And, like, it was always the little, you know, not mean girl bonding, but just girls like bonding together because they would have their own secret language and they could talk about everybody and right in front of their face and nobody would know and blah, blah, blah. To me, I just never had the brain power for it. Like I don't have the attention span. Like if you were to tell me, okay, now every single word has to end with GA. So you have to say, you know, welcome ga to ga, like, I couldn't do that. My brain doesn't work like that. I don't care enough, and I don't have the attention span to do it. But there are probably certain, like, small words that I've used. I know there's certain phrases that we've used together that, you know, started off as a just, like, it was just something either she or I used, and then it became part of the vernacular. Like, my wife knows, like, if she's out and she sees, like, a piece of clothing that she wants or she thinks she's gonna look cute in and she shows it to me, 9 times out of 10 my response is gonna be try it on, see what happens. And she'll then she'll base whether or not she buys it solely off of my initial reaction of that, like, first look of with it on her. And she knows that when I say see what happens means I don't know, you need to prove me right or wrong on this one.
See how I think. So see what happens is actually see what I think about it.
Yeah. Okay. It's interesting because my brothers and I, when we grew up, we used see what happens as I'm going to kick your ass. Like keep throwing the ball at me right now. What happens. I'm just going to come over there. I'm going to beat your ass. And I used it one day, like, as a joke to her. And I was like she had too many friggin' dresses already. And she was like, I really like this dress. Try it on. See what happens. I'm going to whoop your ass. And so, and she laughed. And then she went and put it on and came out of the dressing room. And I was like, damn. And she was like, see, I saw what happens. This is what happens.
Yeah. And so I want you to whoop my ass in this dress. Yeah.
Then became that. I mean, we have our friendly, like, non-actually physically violent things. But there's there's times where, you know, I tell her I'm going to go to my car because I keep a pillow in my car so I could sleep at all times. And when I'm driving and she annoys me, I grab the pillow and I hit her with it. Like a pillow fight. But... So anytime she is doing something just enough to get under my skin and she knows it, I tell her I'm going to go to my car and she knows that I'm going to go get a, like, I won't go to the car. I'll just go to the bedroom and grab a pillow and I'll just smack her with a pillow because why not?
Okay. So that's part of it. So Susanna, what did you, when you started researching, what did you find? What did the experts tell you?
They told me that people in couples like to feel like there is a secret language because it shows the couple has something special that nobody else has. So it's a way of letting somebody in on a secret, almost like you're speaking in a way other people don't understand. It can also be a way to add fun and playfulness to a relationship and make each other laugh, maybe even diffuse a fight if you use this language when you're fighting. Or to talk about things like sex that you don't feel comfortable talking about using the actual words. So you might use your code language.
Mm. Okay.
Wouldn't it be now? Okay. Y'all both have degrees and all kinds of stuff. To me, I feel like talking about sex because you're not comfortable using certain words. Wouldn't that be like a barrier to intimacy? Wouldn't it be like if you're supposed to be the most this is the person you're supposed to be most comfortable with, you should learn to, you know, actually get deep and dirty with the word, like get down in the muck and use those words, even if you don't like them from time to time?
Well, maybe using a word that feels safer to you is one step toward that. I mean, if you're communicating what you need to communicate, I don't know if it matters so much what word you're using. Like if you're to each other's genitals, for instance, does it matter that you're not saying penis? I don't know. If you don't like that word, maybe you have a better word for it. I don't know if that's a obstacle necessarily.
Yeah. I'm with you, Susanna, because if we're talking about penis, to me, like, that's so clinical. There's nothing sexy about using the word, oh, do you want to suck my penis? No, you won't. If you want to say you want to suck my cock, that starts getting me kind of aroused. So I think, words. I think it's important just to find any words that work just to have conversations. and to laugh about them. So what, like when you started talking to couples, what kinds of languages did they have? Was it, it wasn't all the time really, was it?
No, not all the time. I think that would be very difficult, but, yeah. Let's see. What did people say? One person said, someone saying horse instead of house, tort for treat, large, small, cross fort for CrossFit. So they just add R's everywhere.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, I'm thinking maybe that started with like in somebody misspeaking and then they just keep digging it in and stuff. I don't know, but okay.
I think it started with a meme actually where like animals talk that way or something.
Oh, okay.
One person said, because okay, she's American and her husband's French, so they use English words with a French accent, like tired for tired. And apparently this is a form of flattery through imitation that, you know, they're imitating each other's languages.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, it's funny because I do.
And see, when I make fun of British people with their accents, everybody calls me an asshole. Like, I got shunned every time I was everywhere in that country because somebody would ask me if I wanted a beer and I would respond sounding just like them and they thought I was making fun of them. Come on. It was just flattery. I just like the accent.
Yeah, there you go.
Bunch of jerks.
But it's funny because when I do my dirty talk workshops, like among the research that I found was that when we do use the same words, that this there's mimicry that humans instinctively do when we're trying to bond with people. So in some ways that using somebody's accent and stuff, I'm guessing is sort of a form of that.
It sounds like it. Yeah, let's see. There was a study on famous letters by historical couples, Elizabeth Barrett and Robert Browning and Ted Hughes and Sylvia Plath. And as they were getting closer, their language became more similar. And as they were drifting apart, their language became more different. So that may be something we do instinctually without even thinking about it, like imitate a partner's language when we want to form a bond with them.
Oh, that's so interesting. So because people are always thinking like, okay, what are the warning signs, right? Couples usually are unhappy for 6 years before they seek counseling help. And by then, right, it's so late, it's so hard. But it's interesting. So maybe one thing that couples could be on the lookout for is when they stop using their private code language and stuff, or they stop using the words that they've shared in the past. That might be a really interesting sort of thing to keep a lookout for.
Yeah, it could.
That might do. So with you, like, since you did this research and everything, when you go into relationships now, do you try to create some sort of shared language, or do you think it just has to happen,
organically?
Thank you.
I haven't thought about it. I don't think that, I don't think that it would necessarily help to try to force something like that. I feel like it's probably something that should happen organically. I mean, there are other ways to bond with people, tell them your secrets, like tell them how much you like them. I wouldn't necessarily suggest making up a language for that sake. I think it's just a fun thing that may have that positive bonus.
Okay. How important, because one thing you had mentioned to me, like, you talked about the language of sex, the language of love and stuff. So how important do you think language is for people and for couples, and how so?
What do you mean by that?
Too vague. How important do you think it is that people actually do talk about their sexy life? Like, you know, we're saying, Aaron was saying, suggesting that maybe if they can't actually deal with it directly with sort of proper words, that that's not good. But you and I think both agree that you don't have to use certain words, but how important, and maybe you don't know, for couples to actually be able to talk about it instead of just doing, right? I get the, it's natural, so we shouldn't have to talk about it. I get that a lot from very conservative people.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot too. Like, oh, that ruins the flow of things. We're doing a dance with each other. I don't want to like interrupt the dance. I think, yeah, sometimes it does feel forced, but I also think that you can't really improve things without talking. And sometimes you do kind of have to force that conversation if it doesn't feel natural. You know, even if that's just telling your partner, I like when you do this while you're in the bedroom, right? After sex is also a good time because you have all the hormones going that help you feel comfortable. So you can say, I really liked when you did this thing. You could even say, you know, next time I'd like to try this without necessarily saying, I wish you'd done this, but you can say, I really liked this. Next time I'd like to try this other thing. And yeah, I think couples should just become normal. Like the moment it pops into your head, be able to say it like anything else. Some couples set aside time to talk about their sex lives, which it doesn't have to be that way. But if you feel like you're someone who's not comfortable and like you won't get the words out, you could set aside time, or you could even do it in writing. You could text each other afterward, like, hey, I'm still thinking about, you know, how you were doing this last night, and I can't wait to do that again. I think those finding some way is important, because especially if you're having problems in your sex life, those will only escalate if you don't talk about them. And even if you're not, things might get boring if you don't talk about how to switch things up and improve it.
Yeah. But, you know, I used to coin the term BMS, boring married sex. And I said, you don't have to be married to have BMS, but damn, it's just no fun. No fun. So, all right. How, you know, we have this, and you've written about the orgasm gap, which I think is pretty significant. People may not realize, but your research, I think, showed that men have 3 orgasms for every 1 that a female has in heterosexual relationships. How do you think people can use language, private language, whatever, conversation, et cetera, texting, to help alleviate that orgasm gap or minimize?
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I recommend if you're somebody who orgasms more frequently by yourself than with a partner is to tell them or show them what you do by yourself. That could be, so that may not actually be a verbal conversation. I think that's easiest to do actually by showing them. You can say, hey, do you want me to show you how I do it? Or I think it would be hot if we watched each other masturbate, or even take their hands and sort of place it where you want it and move it the way you want it, or have them put their hand over your hand while you just do what you want to do. You can also bring sex toys in the bedroom. You could say, I think it would be fun if we went to a sex toy shop together and picked something out. And because a lot of people orgasm more reliably with sex toys, and just make it a fun thing. I mean, if your goal is to orgasm, that's okay to say, but some people feel shy about that or feel like they don't want to put pressure on their partner. So if that's the case, just say, I think it would be cool if we tried this new thing, if we tried this toy, or if we tried, I don't know, like smoking weed before sex. I hope I'm allowed to say that. Or like,
you can say anything.
Whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I don't know, BDSM, whatever. Usually whatever you fantasize about by yourself, incorporating that into partnered play will be a way to get off more. So you can, you know, sharing fantasies with a partner is helpful. And it's also helpful for a partner to suspend judgment of fantasies, because it's normal to have fantasies that are out there, quote unquote, like that are kinky or like not vanilla. And, I liked your idea about writing each other erotica, like, or, to just show each other what fantasies you have, or even watch porn together, or like show your partner a porn video that turns you on, just so you can like bridge that gap between solo and partnered sex. And if you cannot, because there is a percentage of women that have not had an orgasm even through solo sex, if that is the case, I would say that, again, toys can be helpful. Seeing a sex therapist may be helpful, so they can give you some suggestions. And I think a lot of the time it is about being mentally aroused, mentally engaged. So either like finding a fantasy that really appeals to you, or practicing mindfulness where you're not necessarily fantasizing, but you're just very in tune with your body. You're asking yourself, what am I feeling right now? And you can practice that in the shower or like any setting, really. Just like, what am I hearing, feeling, seeing, tasting, smelling right now? And like get in a habit of getting in tune with yourself so that you can like experience more sensations. Because sometimes the main obstacle is not that you can't feel, but you're covering your head. So you're not aware of what you're feeling.
Yeah. My head often takes me a million miles away. So I think that's a good point. And I also, actually, while you were saying that, I think in addition to doing that for ourselves, I think maybe partners who ask questions like too often they'll say, oh, do you like this? And I say, that's a brain question. That's right. That takes us out of our body into our brain to make us think. And then we often are thinking, oh, we want to make them feel better. But I think maybe if your partner asks, what are you feeling? How does this feel? Describe it. That would be a good way to help your partner get into their body and to stay there, I think. Does that sound about right to you? Or
I like that point. I never thought about that. But yeah, do you like this? Then you have to like translate it into yes or no. Yeah, I think how does this feel? That could work for some people. Some people might be afraid, what if it doesn't feel good? Then what do I say? Because, you know, that's not necessarily going to turn your partner on if they're like, how does this feel? And you're like, kind of weird. But maybe, you know, another way to respond is just, how does this feel? Could you try doing this other thing? Just always frame it in the positive as like a, what might feel good rather than what feels bad.
Yeah. I say like better A or B maybe or something.
One question I like is there anything I can do to make it better? Because that helps your partner to give feedback without being afraid of hurting your feelings. Because there's no implication that it's bad. The implication is just, let's make it even better.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. And then, sorry, I'm going to go off topic for just a minute, though, because, again, we're getting to the end of the segment. And one thing I realized is you did Betty Dodson's body sex workshop, the weekend workshop, right?
I have done 3 of those workshops now.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So I did it once. I did one of her very last ones right before COVID and stuff. And I thought it was really amazing. And for people who don't know, Betty Dodson she was one of the foremost leaders in female orgasm back in the 70s. She actually started talking about the fact that women were not having orgasm. Like nobody focused on female orgasm even during sex. So she started doing feminine consciousness raising stuff. And as part of that also being talking about self masturbation and self pleasure, and would bring women together for a weekend of nudity and learning to have your best orgasms. And I like, Susanna, that you were like totally uncomfortable with that nudity thing too. Cause God knows I was so freaked out at the idea. I just couldn't even imagine. But do you recall, and this is going back, but did you learn anything then about pleasuring yourself that you might be able to share with people?
Yes, actually, I learned that orgasm lives on the breath. Those were Betty's words to me. Because I was like, I don't get why everyone is moaning so much. Like, are they experiencing something better than me? And she was like, orgasm lives on the breath. So if you like want to feel more, you should make as much noise as possible. And it's true. It works that like, once I was like, okay, I'm just going to like open up my voice, let whatever sound come out. Like I felt everything more intensely because I think it brings you into the moment when you're expressing something, you can't not feel what you're expressing. So yeah, that was probably my biggest takeaway that I still use.
Oh, I like that. Orgasm lives on the breath. All right. I'm going to have to remember that. And yeah, I like that. I say that we are shut down. We grow up trying to hide the fact that we're self-pleasuring or that we're having, you know, we're sneaking sex and stuff. So we all get quiet during sexy, but it's true that when we're holding that in, it actually diminishes our pleasure. And when we just are willing to let things flow, then we can actually pay more attention and not minimize. So I like that. So then a partner could say, could help encourage their partner to be more vocal, to make more noises during sexy, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think you'd want to be careful not to make it performative, because I think some women feel like they should moan because that's what porn stars do. And so I would be careful, like telling a partner, you know, make more noise, but maybe say something like, I heard that, you know, this can actually help you feel more. Do you want to try and like make it clear that it's for them? Or it can also be for you. Like, I want to know what feels good to you. Could you, you know, try making noise? But just be sensitive to the fact that they may feel, someone may not naturally be very loud. So you don't want to make them feel like they're forcing something that's not organic. And it doesn't have to be the kind of noise that sounds sexy. It could be what feels sexy for them.
Yeah, that's a good point. I say my vocabulary when I'm aroused is like goes down to like, I don't know, 5 words. It's like, oh, Jesus, or damn, or oh my fuck. You know, it's like, I don't know. I can't put together other words. So that would be it. All right. Any questions, Aaron? We're kind of running out of time here. It goes by so quickly, but any questions?
No, I mean, it makes sense. The whole one, using languages too. When you did your research on the whole orgasm gap, was it only when you're coupled up with your partner, or were you talking about like a 3-to-1 male to female gap counting just self play as well?
I think it is mainly in heterosexual relationships. They don't find it as much with lesbians and gay men. They actually orgasm at about the same rates.
But is it when they're playing together, or when, like, are you also counting the fact of, okay.
I honestly don't know where the 1-to-3 statistic comes from. The one that I usually use is 95% of straight men versus 65% of straight women say that they always are almost are always orgasms when they had sex over the past few months. Okay. I don't know of any studies on male. I think men report more masturbation, so they would probably have more orgasms through masturbation. But I think the gap is mainly partnered sex.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah. Makes sense. And so again, you know, for our listeners out there, you know, if you are ahead of, if your orgasm gap is non-existent, knock on wood, or really low, then take pride in that and celebrate that. And because it really is, that's where it should be, that we all get as many orgasms as we want and as often as we want without being too often. I think it's women, we just say, oh, you know, it's going to take too long. And then we're like, oh, it doesn't matter. But it really does. Orgasm is good for us, just like it is for men. So, all right. So before we sign off, Susanna, is there anything else that you want to share with our audience, or anything that you think they could take away? That we haven't covered. So,
if you want help with any of these things, you can contact me about coaching. You could reach me at susannaweiss.com. I think up there we go. Or perfect. Yeah, Instagram Weiss Susanna, Twitter Susanna Weiss.
Okay. Terrific. All right. Well, thank you.
Sorry. Go ahead. One thing, I have a free course available on my website called The Orgasm Cure for people who want to improve or increase the frequency of their orgasm. So if you just go to my website and click courses, you'll find it there. And it's just like an email course where you get an email sent to you every day for 2 weeks.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you. All right. So again, folks, that's susannaweiss.com. And if you're driving or whatever, you can just go to our to the show notes and you'll find Susanna's website there. So yeah, go take her class, share it with your friends and partners. And that's great. Like, again, everybody should come with us. So, all right. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Susanna Weiss. You are really, really amazing and impressive. I absolutely am astonished by all that you do and appreciate your passion for love and sexy stuff. And Aaron, thanks again so much. It's always a pleasure. And everybody, thank you so much for joining us for Come With Us podcast, where you get the bare naked truth about love, sex, and relationships. We're glad to be on the sexy journey with you and can't wait to see you next week. Big hugs and love. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Come With Us podcast. Be sure to follow us on social media at Come With Us Podcast and send in your questions, comments, and confessions to comewithusconfessions@gmail.com. Until next time, keep it fun, flirty, and naughty.